with a bit lengthy span cells and quite warm. BBC Radio Scotland.
It's Sunday morning with me, Cathy MacDonald. Before midday, we'll be looking at what's behind a 50% rise in hate crime against people with disabilities and a heartwarming story that connects a Scottish missionary and a Bangladeshi filmmaker. But first, we're halfway through a two-week gun amnesty launched by Police Scotland, encouraging the public to surrender any firearms or ammunition they might have. But beyond the actual handing in of weapons, what exactly do we mean by amnesty and what kind of space can this create? Could we extend it to political life or even into our own personal lives? Joining me to explore how far we can take the idea of amnesty is Quaker and independent scholar Alistair McIntosh and Fergus McNeill, Professor of Criminology and Social Work at the University of Glasgow. Good morning. A very warm welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Cathy.
Fergus, first of all, looking at it from a practical perspective, what do you make of this idea of actually handing in weapons?
I think in broad terms, it's a great idea. Obviously, the fewer weapons that we have in circulation, the lower the likelihood that those weapons are going to be used to cause harm to people. So trying to reduce the overall available means of doing lethal violence in particular in society is a great thing. And certainly gun amnesties and weapons amnesties around the world have had some significant successes as long as we create the right conditions of privacy for people to dispose of things that they really shouldn't possess.
Certainly the Violence Reduction Unit held a knife amnesty which was successful. It was part of a bigger campaign to make the streets of Scotland safer. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, paramilitaries in Northern Ireland got opportunities to hand over their weapons mm-hmm. under a government amnesty. Do you think, Alistair, that on a practical level there's, I suppose, a promise there of creating a different kind of space? You know, an element of offering a fresh chance, a new start?
Well, it's about moving towards a low-violence culture. That's what the Police Violence Reduction Unit is all about. And in 2006, it had that knife amnesty that brought in nearly 13,000 weapons. So if you compare us with America, the less chance there is of laying your hands on a weapon, the less chance there is of it being used against others or indeed against self with suicide. So it's all to the good, but it needs to be taken not just as an individual action, it needs to be seen as a much wider matrix of how we reduce violence in our society.
And yet while Police Scotland have this gun amnesty, at the same time there's an arms fair in Glasgow, is it? Rather ironic, isn't it? An interesting juxtaposition there.
Well, it's an interesting one because it's kind of like, you know, we won't have guns where they're going to affect our own neighbourhood, but it's okay to be a major manufacturer of weapons that are sold internationally where it's going to affect other people's neighbourhoods. As I would see it, and I speak as a Quaker committed to non-violence, there's a deep hypocrisy there which we need to de-escalate. We need to start unhooking Scotland from such reliance on the arms trade.
And broadening this out, Fergus, are there other practical examples of how amnesties could be carried out?
Yeah, the example I'm most familiar with in my work is prisoner amnesties, where particularly in Latin countries, when there are significant problems with prison overcrowding, the government takes the decision to release people early. And I think in both cases, the weapons amnesty and the prisoner amnesty, the state is basically saying, OK, we have a legal entitlement to pursue the citizen to a certain extent to make them suffer some kind of penalty or punishment, but we're not going to execute that authority to the full extent of our power. Instead, we're going to step back from doing that kind of legitimate state violence, if you like, to people who have broken laws. We're going to step back and ask for their cooperation in living differently, which speaks to the kind of culture change that Alistair is discussing.
And of course, Alistair, it's not just about the kind of physical or the practical of giving up arms or prisoners or whatever. It can be about almost like a personal confessorial type of amnesty. And I'm thinking particularly in the context of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa.
Well, that's right. You see, what amnesty does is it brings into play the quality of mercy. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. It's not just that we yield to those who have done things that have brought violence upon society by saying we will have an amnesty, whether for weapons or in a truth and reconciliation context. It's also that we open out the space where people who have been backed into corners with violence, whether it was with the whites in South Africa who had had themselves backed into a corner, or whether it was paramilitaries in Northern Ireland before the decommissioning of weapons, that it's not just the perpetrators of violence that benefit, but also wider society, because when the perpetrators are able to come out of their corner and have breathing space because they have experienced mercy, it creates a more merciful society.
Well, indeed, there's a reciprocal nature to this in that it can give dignity to both parties.
I think that's the point, Cathy. And, you know, just earlier this month, I was running an event where a former South African Special Forces soldier came up to me in the course of what I was talking about, part of which involved non-violence. And he says, "Let me tell you something that I've never told anybody in 40 years. And I said, "What's that?" He said, "When I was in the Special Forces, our task was to go into rural areas, search the villages, and if we found any signs of liberation material, any anti-apartheid material, our orders were to round up and even kill anybody left in the village and to raise the village." So there we were. We were in this area, and I came to a village with my men. I was a lieutenant at the time. I came to this village surrounded by a heavy stockade. We went in, searched the houses. They found liberation material in one of them, and I was about to give the order to destroy the village. Helicopter gunships in the air and all the rest of it, when a woman emerged from one of the houses and walked slowly towards me. And she approached me with such enormous dignity and came right up to me and just gazed into my eyes that something changed in me. And I gave the orders to the men just to leave and leave the village unscathed. Now, there you see the quality of the woman's dignity, her spiritual presence, opening out the quality of mercy in that soldier. And 40 years later, when as an oldish man now, he looks back on his life, that is the kind of thing that he remembers that helps to heal his past.
And that's a very good example, Fergus, too, of, I suppose, what it's really about, the powerful choosing not to exercise the full extent of their power.
Exactly. And that is a wonderful description of a moment of true human-to-human recognition. What happens, sadly, I think, in our conventional approaches to criminal justice is that we effectively create people as combatants. We have an adversarial system. We define people as offender, as victim. And then we argue over or we contest the nature of their claims against one another. And in a sense, amnesties and wider kind of questions of mercy are about setting that aside and saying, as human beings who need to find a way to live together in community, how else might we more constructively resolve these conflicts? And at the root of peacemaking, whether it's in the domestic sphere or in the international sphere, is the recognition of human dignity of all of the parties who've been affected by the conflict. And I think in our personal lives, we can all relate to that. None of us sustain long-term relationships, for example, by keeping count of wrongs or by asking an arbitrator to determine what penalty I should serve for failing in my domestic duties this week. Rather, we exercise amnesty or mercy to one another in order to sustain that which we value together, which is our connection. That doesn't mean that we can forget all wrongs or that we should set them aside without dealing with them. It means that we should try to deal with them in a different way.
And I was going to say, Fergus, could you just tell my wife what you just said about neglect of domestic duties?
Yeah, but it goes both ways,
Alistair. No.
I did wonder when you said, but you qualified it, Fergus, by saying, of course, we don't have to forget everything. But, you know, taking it, I suppose, slightly seriously too and extending that, there are strong religious threads to this idea of amnesty, Alistair. And I was thinking, you know, again, it's almost about sacrifice, whether it's sacrificing your, not necessarily your compulsion, your idea of what is order and what is justice for that split second, such as the example you gave us. But, you know, by extension, in the Christian faith, Christ sacrificing his life.
Yes, well, I think, you know, what is a sacrifice in question? You're sacrificing what is perhaps your natural desire for vengeance when you have been wronged. Now, how do you do that? How do you find the strength to let go of that vengeance? And in my view, that's where we need to reach into deeper aspects of what it means to be human. That's where we need to reach into what I would think of as being the spiritual resourcing by which we're given the power to allow that strength of love to conquer the way that power might otherwise go, such as would only tighten the spiral of violence. And so we break the spiral of violence. That's what we have to do today. That's what something like this gun amnesty is doing. It's trying to break spirals of violence. Every weapon handed in just now is somebody saying, I'm taking a step to break the spiral of violence. And I only pray that we can extend that from individual weapons towards global issues such as the arms trade.
Yes, in a sense, by interrupting that continuity. Of course, Fergus, we're probably most familiar with the word itself through the work of Amnesty International, which encompasses some of those very ideas that we've discussed. But how much can we get a shared international understanding of what we mean by amnesty?
I think the part of the problem is that the concept is so diffuse and contested. We've been sort of talking about it and finding lots of common ground here, but to take the word back to its original Greek meaning, it comes from amnestia, which is about forgetting. And yet, for me, the work of Amnesty International, at least as I first encountered it, was about very consciously remembering prisoners of conscience, holding them in our memories and taking active steps to engage with them. So the kind of tensions between not forgetting in the sense of ignoring wrongs, but rather engaging with wrongs in a different way, consciously, creatively, constructively, trying to have the kinds of dialogue that can seek to resolve conflict, whether at the international level or in the kind of micro-conflicts of our daily lives. I think that's fundamental. And I think rather than thinking about amnesia or amnestia and forgetting, I like the idea of looking beyond. Again, not overlooking or ignoring, but looking beyond. So I'm not going to see you as defined by the conflict between us. I'm not going to call you an offender against me. That defines you in a way which locks us into combative positions. I'm going to recognise the offence and I'm going to seek some resolution of the offence, but not by defining you in that way as somehow at odds with me and therefore deserving of treatment which is different from that which I would expect from myself.
And I suppose just finally ask that, you know, the whole idea of this equalising in terms of an amnesty, there's a break, there's an interruption to this continuity, whether it's of violence, whether it's arms, whatever. Do you think if we had a period of reprieve from direct conflict, say between gangs, tribes, or indeed even nation states, that it would allow for a different headspace or a different way of seeing things that would work towards resolution?
Yes, because I think that when you respond non-violently, when you respond with amnesty, forgiveness or mercy, what you actually do is you subvert the logic of violence. Violence expects violence to be reciprocated. And so the power of this, the beauty of what Fergus has just said, is that this opens up a new way of being human. It opens up a new way of being in the world that can lead us into the future peaceably.
My thanks to you both this morning, Alistair McIntosh and Fergus McNeil. And Fergus, while we're